The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The International Court of Justice has declared that countries could be in violation of international law if they fail to take measures against climate change. Nations are harmed by failing nations could also litigate and claim they are entitled to reparation. Now, joining me now to talk about this is Oisin Coughlan, Policy Advisor for the Stop Climate Chaos Coalition. Oisin, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, let's talk about what the ICJ actually said.
Yeah, so they were asked, I think it's actually worth saying how this came about. A group of young law students in the Pacific Islands started a campaign a few years ago to try to get this to the highest courts because they didn't think the world was doing enough and their countries are actually under direct threat from sea level rise, like total direct obliteration. So they got their country, Vanuatu, to bring to ask the UN General Assembly to get the court to make a ruling. And that's what's happened. It took them 6 years, but that's what happened this week. So it's a demonstration of what a small group of people can achieve. But so this is the world's highest court. We know they're also hearing cases about genocide in Gaza and Israel at the moment. And they've come out with an advisory opinion about this. So it's basically a summary of their understanding of international law as it applies to climate. And I think it's really interesting. First of all, they've said that there is a right to a clean, healthy and sustainable environment. They've said that's a precondition for all the other rights, basically saying, you know, if we don't have a healthy environment, sure, the rest of it doesn't matter. Like not long ago, the international trade union body said there's no jobs in a dead planet. Well, basically, the World Court has said there's no rights on a dead planet. We have to protect the environment first. And they particularly interestingly took aim at fossil fuels. They said that the production and consumption and subsidization of fossil fuels may well constitute an internationally wrongful act, i.e. a breach of international law. And therefore that all countries are required not just to make commitments to reduce emissions, but to actually follow through and to do it.
Now, the question is, if you feel you have been wronged and the sea levels are rising in your Pacific island and you want reparations for having to move people inland or to move them entirely if your island is going to go underwater, who do you sue?
Well, that was one of the questions that was addressed. And basically, in the case of countries and the world and the International Court of Justice, you sue other countries. So you sue countries that you think have contributed most to it or have burnt the most fossil fuels. And I saw a lot of coverage in the last few days of Australia in particular, because they had they had taken part in the case and said, no, we're not obliged to act beyond sort of the very voluntary requirements in the Paris Agreement. Some of the Pacific Island states could sue Australia, people could sue the US, people could sue...
But, I mean, the climate is the climate and it's global.
Yes.
I mean, the fact that you might be near Australia and you think, I'll sue them, but then you look further afield to the United States, which is, a huge consumer of carbon, and will Vanuatu sue the Trump's USA?
Absolutely. Well, and the court does say that the countries have a right to take cases and to seek reparations if they're damaged. But they admit it will be difficult, challenging to unpack the levels of responsibility to different countries. But they don't shy away from that. And they kind of say, you know, like that's a legal matter that will have to be untangled in the courts.
And also, I mean, you might have certain states like the Gulf states, for instance, in the Middle East, who are huge consumers per head of population of fossil fuels. They don't necessarily produce overall a huge amount because they're relatively small populations.
And they don't consume it so much, they just export it. So, I mean, it's interesting that they do mention...
Their air conditioning is everywhere. You know, the per head of...
It's very high, but they're...
Per head, yeah.
Yes.
So the overall amount is not that great compared to China, the United States or other industrial
nations.
But
they are producing a lot. So, and it's interesting, the court does mention like the liability potentially for both production and for consumption and indeed for subsidising. So like it puts all governments in the frame in one way or another. One of the kind of sadder notes, because it was the small islands that took it, is one of the things they ruled on is what happens if your state is your territory is obliterated entirely by sea level rise, and they concluded that your state still exists
even though it's underwater.
So there, I mean, the point of that finding is that you're still able to sue.
Okay, so you sue in what court though? Because the United States will not go along with the ICJ.
Well, exactly. So what's interesting about a ruling like this is that you don't have to go through the ICJ, and as you say, the US is not party to the ICJ. So this case could be cited in federal cases in the US. And it does also say actually that countries are liable for the actions of the companies that operate in their territories. So that means, you know, you can sue, you could sue the US for the actions of Exxon, who knew about climate for decades and kind of, you know, like the tobacco companies didn't sort of.
But I mean, with in the United States, and we'll concentrate on the United States because of drill baby drill and burn baby burn, which is the philosophy of the current government of the United States and opting out of the Paris Accord and so on. I mean, when you go to a jurisdiction that has a Supreme Court which goes along with all of this, sure. I mean, what hope have you got in the US courts?
Look, I think...
Because the legal framework will have changed anyway.
I think it's hard to tell in advance. I agree with you that the, you know, an analysis of the politics of law in the US right now isn't very optimistic. But that does change over time. And there are, of course, more than one, you know, we see it a lot at the moment with migration cases in the US. A local court makes one ruling and it gets challenged. So what this means is that climate is going to be the subject of a lot more litigation over the next 5 to 10 years. And particularly, the more the countries, including this court case, big court cases in Ireland happening as well, the more the countries fail to live up to the promises they've made under international or domestic law, this case basically says, you know, you're therefore, you could be liable. And therefore, citizens in individual countries and countries in international arenas will take cases. The ruling will also kind of feed into the international negotiations. You can be sure that at the meeting of the parties, the conference of the parties to the United Nations climate change treaties, when they meet in Brazil this year, you can be sure states will be citing this example. And one other important thing is it does say that it's not just the climate treaties that matter. It's also human rights law, traditional international law, all the obligations of international law apply to climate too. And the countries, the big polluters have tried to deny that and say, no, it's only the voluntary commitments in Paris and Kyoto that matter. And the court said, no, it's all international law applies to climate like it does to everything else.
But you may have difficulty in vindicating the rights that the court seems to bestow on you. I mean, if you're an indigenous tribe in Brazil and you're forest is being destroyed by the lumber people or by those who want to plant cash crops. I mean, how do you vindicate your rights?
You know, there's no... Look, one of the things we know about climate, because of how broad and deep the issue is across all sectors in all countries and how complex the politics are nationally and internationally, there's no silver bullet. There's no one answer. It's a very complex jigsaw. But this certainly gives hope. And that very fact that I mentioned at the beginning, that if we'd been sitting here 6 and 7 years ago and said, do you think that group of law students in the Pacific Islands are going to have any luck with that, get a court case at the world's highest court on climate? You say, well, good luck to them. But look, things can work out. Yeah.
If you and I were talking a couple of years ago, I would have been quoting the Chinese are opening up a new coal-fired power station every week or whatever it is. And it looked pretty hopeless that they were going down this path. Now we see they are the leaders in electric vehicles globally. They have come out of nowhere to surpass all of Europe and all the United States. And in spite of what Trump said about the Chinese don't have any wind, they have huge amounts of wind.
Yes, I was looking at this before I came in because I thought you might ask me about China because it's come up before. And they are still the world's largest producer of pollution, partly because they're supplying the rest of the world with goods. But they are now acting because they care about air quality and they don't have their own fossil fuels. So they see the future is powering their country otherwise. So half of all the world's solar is now installed in China.
Half
of all the solar in the world is in China. They put more solar on the grid last year than the rest of the world combined. And if, as you said, bring in wind, they 83% of all the new electricity on the grid in China last year was wind and solar. So coal is now in the halfpenny place in terms of the new connections. So they are
would see coal as an intermediate technology, which they hope to get rid of.
And you know, if the US was acting like China, we'd be in a far more hopeful position. Which is a funny thing to find yourself saying, but that is the truth right now. And that does raise questions for the European Union. Which way are we going to go? Europe doesn't have massive reserves of fossil fuels itself. So, it's being put under pressure to buy more fossil gas from the US. Or is it going to double down on what it has been talking about for years, which is like the electrification of everything and the decarbonisation of electricity to have no pollution? And look, Europe's not going to be competitive if it's relying on foreign oil, coal and gas from very unreliable partners.
I think they discovered
the
oil and gas off Poland, did they not, in the last week or so?
It's not going to keep Europe going in terms of the scale of Europe. And the choice is, do we rely on Russia, Saudi Arabia and the US for fossil gas, or do we go hard and fast towards renewable electricity?
And there are other technologies coming along, you know, the increased use of geothermal, going digging down into the center of the earth and trying to extract the heat that is found there. Fusion is always 10 years away, they say.
Yes, well hopefully you're still, you and I are still here when fusion happens. But in the meantime, battery storage is really improving because that's important too. We do know that it isn't always windy and always sunny in everywhere at the same time. So we do need to be able to move that electricity around with good interconnection and we need to be able to store it. And the battery storage is getting cheaper and better in the way that solar panels did over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So that does provide hope. The technology is there. It's the politics of this that are challenging.
And we're hoping that some of the materials they use for battery technologies, that they won't have to keep on digging up lithium all the time.
Recycled. Like they can be reused and recycled. So again, sometimes it's more convenient to go and dig up new stuff, but obviously there's limitations, to physical limitations and political limitations to getting new, and environmental limitations to getting new lithium and new rare earth minerals all the time. But they can be recycled and reused. So again, it comes down to the political will, and politicians seem to think that doing climate action is more trouble than not doing it. Hopefully this legal case will remind them that they're walking into legal trouble as well as moral and actually climate trouble, as we've seen that the 50 degrees are in Turkey and 48 degrees in Greece. We don't want that.
Oisin Coughlan, Policy Advisor to the Stop Climate Chaos Coalition. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.